This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, July 3rd, 2013. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The 15th annual KUAF Summer Jazz Series welcomes American bebop and jazz pianist, composer, and singer Bob Doro to Walton Arts Center's Star Theater Saturday, July 13th. Doro has worked with Miles Davis and Allen Ginsberg and is the voice and composer of songs used in Schoolhouse Rock. More information is available at waltonartcenter.org or KUAF.com.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, a look at the current landscape of politics in Arkansas. Roby Brock from Talk Business Arkansas sits down with State Senator Jason Rapert and the senior editor of the Arkansas Times, Max Brantley. Also, a couple of educational lessons. First, we learn the work that goes into transporting and caring for livestock participating in the Rodeo of the Ozarks. Then, we look at some of the steps the city of Siloam Springs is taking to perform maintenance on a downtown water tower.
But first, Arkansas ended fiscal year 2013 with a surplus of just under $300 million. The State Department of Finance and Administration reported yesterday that for the fiscal year, which ended Sunday, net available revenue was just more than $5 billion, $275 million more than last year. State economist John Shelnut says officials will eventually determine what to do with the surplus.
That money will be parked until the legislature comes back into session. It initially goes into what's called the Revenue Allotment Reserve Fund, and then it will become a General Improvement Fund money at a later point. So it will be available for one-time spending needs.
Officials say revenues were higher than the previous year and revenue predictions primarily because of an increase in income tax collections from individuals. The department attributed the growth to residents shifting income into tax year 2012 to avoid higher federal income tax rates.
Ongoing highway improvements mean motorists should expect major lane closures and delays this July 4th holiday. Randy Ort with the Arkansas State Highway and Transportation Department says sections of roadway will be closed on I-530 in Jefferson County, I-540 in Crawford and Sebastian counties, and on U.S. 67 in White County.
I-40 the other direction towards Fort Smith. We've got some major work right through Russellville. We've got about 8 miles where you're going to have, it's going to be narrowed down to one lane in each direction, so you need to plan appropriately for that. A lot of people travel between Little Rock and Pine Bluff. They're very familiar with about an 8 mile construction zone we have near Redfield. You're still going to encounter one lane closed, so only one lane open in each direction throughout this week.
Additionally, only one lane will be open in each direction on Interstate 540 in the Fort Smith area. Ort says highway officials are pleased to report that the major work zone on Interstate 40 near Hazen is now substantially complete, and all travel lanes will be open in that area between Little Rock and Memphis.
After interest rates on new Stafford student loans for low-income applicants doubled this week, many wonder if Congress will be able to arrive at a solution to keep rates lower. Yesterday, on the campus of the University of Arkansas Little Rock, some students reacted to the news of the rate hike.
It's sort of the sacrifice that you make if you're going to do years of education. There's those years of income that you don't get a lot of times, and so, you know, which one's going to put you further?
People are a little bit shy now of the loans because of that, not knowing what's going to happen, what the interest rate is going to do, how it's going to affect them.
Makes you think of what it's worth, and if they're going to raise the rates on it again, then that makes it even worse at that point, because then you're going to end up spending a lot more for it, and it's going to take you longer to pay it back. So my mom still paid back her loans 20 years after she graduated.
Those were the voices of students H.L. Moody, Camille Guest Mitchell, and John Fitzhugh. Low-income students who apply for federally subsidized Stafford loans for the upcoming fall semester will see their interest rates double from the current 3.4% to 6.8%.
A rise in temperatures and outdoor activities brings an increase in fire-related injuries. Sparklers and fireworks used to celebrate the summer holidays are often the cause of burn wounds. Pamela Richard is the spokeswoman for the Burn Prevention Outreach Program at Arkansas Children's Hospital, home to the state's only burn center. She says they've been spreading awareness for more than 15 years.
We have an informational bulletin that we have as a press release. We also try to, encourage parents not to buy the fireworks and to take the families to public firework displays and not buy fireworks and shoot them off themselves. You never let kids shoot the fireworks.
More information on the Burn Center is available at archildrens.org.
Another proposed ballot initiative aimed at legalizing medical marijuana in the natural state has been rejected by the Arkansas Attorney General's office. The group Arkansans for Medicinal Cannabis, for the fourth time, submitted the popular name and ballot title for proposed amendment to the state constitution, and Attorney General Dustin McDaniel again rejected the proposed ballot initiative on grounds that the proposed amendment contains several ambiguities, stating in part that the text, as provided to his office, is too overly broad in scope and does not list the ramifications of declaring cannabis, hemp, or marijuana as an agricultural commodity, a medicinal product, or as an intoxicant.
Speaking of amendments to the state constitution, a lawsuit was filed yesterday in Pulaski County to strike down the 2004 amendment barring same-sex marriage in the state. 11 couples were named as plaintiffs in the suit brought against the state. The plaintiffs, represented by attorney Cheryl Maples, seeks to have Amendment 83 and Act 146 of 1997, another law that prohibits marriage licenses from being issued to same-sex couples, declared unconstitutional and invalid. The suit states that both laws are narrowly focused on only denying the class of homosexuals the right to be married and the right to have their legal marriage recognized by the state of Arkansas.
While last week was the hottest of the year so far, the past 2 days have seen record lows in Fayetteville. The National Weather Service in Tulsa reports that yesterday's low of 53 beats the previous record low of 57 set in 1985, and this morning's low of 52 degrees beats the previous record of 53 set in 1959, and the low of 55 Monday morning tied the record low that was set in 1976. Slight chance of showers tonight, lows in the mid-50s in northwest Arkansas, lower 60s in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, slight chance of rain, highs from 84 to 89. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy, lows from 58 to 63.
This is Ozarks at Large. The Arkansas General Assembly has been adjourned for weeks, and the 2014 primary elections are months away. But there is nothing quiet about Arkansas politics right now. This week, Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas helped lead a conversation about some of the most intriguing political topics of the day. His guests were State Senator Jason Rapert, a Republican from Conway, and Max Brantley, the senior editor of the Arkansas Times. The discussion was part of the television show Capital View, seen on KARK in Central Arkansas. You'll also hear the voice of Roby's co-host, David Goins. Roby first asked Max Brantley and Senator Rapert about the repercussions possible in the wake of the resignation of a state constitutional officer.
Let's talk first about the Martha Shoffner trial. This week we saw a hearing. Does her trial pose a problem for Democrats, Max, and an opportunity for Republicans?
Well, sure. To have a former Democratic office holder on trial and being, if not admitting, being forced to deal with some pretty obvious bad things, that is receiving money from somebody who got state business, this isn't good for anybody, and she'll be associated with the party and should be. And the Republicans will make hay of it. I don't know yet how this is going to end up. Chuck Banks tried to get a plea bargain to start with. I'm not exactly sure whether that option remains on the table for him, but it's hard for me to see a path to acquittal for her. But that's what trials are for, and that's unfair in a way to say that.
Mm-hmm. Senator Rapert, what's your take on that? You've worked a lot with that office in trying to unearth some of these and make some corrections.
I've worked with them for a long time, and as you know, I was one of the first that called on her resignation, and that was because of what I saw in this situation. I'm Series 7 licensed investments, and I had heard enough at that point to know something wasn't right in the way business was being conducted. And I really genuinely don't care whether she's Democrat, Republican, or independent. There's no place in state government for corruption and unethical behavior. And the thing that probably bothers me the most about the situation, she did what she did, and she's going to have to be accountable. But the employees in that office literally endured intimidation. And frankly, if it were a private company, the state of Arkansas would probably be sued right now because they were not protected the way they should, because many of those employees said that they went to people and asked for help and said, our people wouldn't help us. I don't know what they meant by that, but I can tell you, justice is going to be served. She's going to have a trial. She could have saved the Arkansas a lot more embarrassment and trouble if she had just pled guilty, but I think she has a complex here. She enjoys the spotlight, even if it's negative, and I think that is wrong, and I feel sorry for her. I hope that she can somehow reclaim her sanity in this issue, because she's not acting as you would think someone would normally act when they've been caught red-handed.
Sticking with federal court for a minute, it's been a while since the 12-week fetal heartbeat bill was before federal court. This idea of severability, you know, that maybe part of this, part of your legislation could survive if the main part of it is thrown out, and that is, you know, banning abortion after 12 weeks. Do you still think that's possible? I mean, some of the court filings since then, you maybe get a sense that Judge Wright may just be inclined to throw the whole thing out. I mean, what would you think?
Well, it's not only possible, that's the law. In the state of Arkansas, and even Mr. Brantley, which can speak on it in a minute, it actually states that severability is inherent in the law. I specifically discussed this issue with Bureau of Legislative Research attorneys, as well as people involved in the process. That's why I have a tolling provision at the end of the bill.
Right, but do you think Judge Wright will throw the whole thing? We're getting a sense now that maybe this isn't severable and the whole thing's going out.
Well, Jason's correct, but there is a but. And there is a clear line of legal precedent in Arkansas, not in federal court, that says there are standards for severability. And if the part, even if there is a severability clause, if it's intrinsically knotted up with the purpose of the law, and after all, you couldn't establish this cutoff for abortion unless you required the fetal heartbeat test in the first place. I think there is at least, a person of good faith would admit, an argument that part of the law is bound up together. And so there's an argument to be made. I'm not going to predict how the judge is going to rule.
Well, I can tell you, actually, I was there in the courtroom when she brought it up. And I respect the judge. It's her courtroom. And she actually brought up and stated to the bench, she said, if the state were to ask me to uphold the informed consent provisions of this bill, I would be inclined to do so. She went further in saying, I do not find that it is unconstitutional or too much of a burden to do an ultrasound to determine if there's a heartbeat and inform the lady and let her know what is the statistical probability of the baby coming to term. And as I've told you, and we could talk about this a long time, I believe when there's a heartbeat, there's life. 60% of Arkansans said they approved of the heartbeat bill. 70% of the legislature voted for it, and we overrode the veto.
I'm not going to filibuster my opinion on this, but there's a heartbeat at 5 weeks, and I don't think if you presented a series of questions in an informed opinion poll to people that they would say a woman who is raped or has a case of incest or has a night she regrets and learns at 5 weeks because she's required to take a fetal heartbeat thing that she can't take a prescription form of medicine to end that abortion, that 60% of the people in America would say she should be required to do it. I don't happen to believe that.
One last topic before we have to wrap up here. Let's talk about the Mark Pryor pending Tom Cotton battle here. You guys both think that Tom Cotton is the ultimate Republican nominee?
I think Tom's headed in that direction. There's no question about it, and he has to make his decision in his own time. The fact of the matter is the winds are against Mark Pryor in this race. He's been on the wrong side of the issues as it relates to the opinions of the Arkansas people. Now, I respect him and the legacy of his family and to actually know Mark, and I believe he's a nice person. I believe if he could, he'd switch parties. But he's in a situation he can't, because the fact is he's trying to run as a Republican now. So we'll see what happens. But Tom Cotton has got the ability, he's got the skills, and he has got the momentum that he can win this election.
Tom Cotton is the best possible candidate for Mark Pryor because he is so extreme. Here's a guy who's voted against disaster aid. He's voted against the farm bill. He's voted against food stamps. He wants to go to war against anybody that rattles a saber out there. He's strange. He has a weird way about him. He came back to Arkansas after years away as a consultant. I understand that the war hawks love him. They raised $100,000 for him this week. He is a smart guy. There's no doubt about that. Believe me, Mark Pryor is going to have a tough race this year. If Tom Cotton's the guy, the Club for Growth, who loves anything as long as a guy will promise you to cut their taxes, will give him however, the billionaires will give him how much money he needs. The big casino guy, Adelson, raised the big money for him this week. But he's, out of all the candidates that Mark Pryor could face, he's the best one. Steve Womack would be another matter entirely.
We heard Max Brantley, the senior editor for the Arkansas Times, and State Senator Jason Rapert, a Republican from Conway, speaking with Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas, and his co-host David Goins. The conversation was included on the most recent edition of Capital View, seen Sunday mornings on KARK in Central Arkansas. You can see and hear more from the conversation at talkbusinessarkansas.com. Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from 4 offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com. And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. More at AECC.com.
The 69th annual Rodeo of the Ozarks kicks off today, and events are scheduled at Parsons Stadium in Springdale through Saturday. Honored by the Professional Rodeo Cowboy Association as one of the top 5 large outdoor rodeos of 2012, this year's event will feature about 500 contestants and professional athletes competing in tie-down roping, steer wrestling, barrel racing, saddle bronc riding, and, of course, bull riding. Athletes are traveling from around the country to participate, but where does all of that livestock come from? Aside from the sheep, which Rodeo of the Ozarks personnel provide for the Mutton Bustin' event, this year's livestock is provided by Smith Pro Rodeos from Athens, Texas. Cody Kidd is the contracting firm's general manager.
As a contracting firm, we come in, the committee or the Rodeo of the Ozarks hires us to provide the rodeo stock for the rodeo. And so we bring in all the calves, all the steers, the bulls, the horses, the riding, some of the riding horses. So basically everything that it takes to put on the rodeo, we actually bring to town.
Kidd says in addition to livestock, the company also provides production equipment, pyrotechnics, chutes for the animals, and other things you need to put on a rodeo. When it comes to the livestock, Kidd estimates they brought 40 to 50 horses, 60 to 65 bulls, and more than 100 steers to Parsons Stadium. He says most of the bulls they have are part of a born-to-buck program, meaning they breed and raise the bulls themselves on their Texas ranch. Kidd says the bulls you'll see at the Rodeo of the Ozarks are 3 to 4 years old and weigh about 2,000 pounds. He says while they do raise these bulls, they do not have to teach them to buck.
That's the cool thing about it. A lot of people think that we make these animals buck with certain flanks or apparatuses, and it's not true. I mean, these things they're bred to buck. It's just like if you're bred to be a school teacher, your mom or your dad might have been a school teacher, and then all of a sudden you take a liking to it, so you're a school teacher. Just like the bull industry, it's gotten to where anybody can be a bull breeder now, because if you have a couple acres or 20 acres or whatever, if you're able to raise a bull and take him some places to go buck, then he might be a bucking bull. And there's some that don't pan out, but most of them it's all bred in them to be able to buck. Like the four bulls that you're seeing here, these are all, I say, calves at one time. They're all out of a bull called Thornberry, and Thornberry has produced probably over 120 something bulls for us. So what he's doing and breeding to some cows that we have at home, we're able to breed this type of stock for them to go ahead and buck.
Just as the bulls are different colors and sizes, each one also poses varying degrees of difficulties for riders, which Kidd says they have to consider when deciding which bulls to take to different rodeos.
There's a lot of different variations, and one that bucks or turns back to the right or turns back to the left, or one that might be just an easy rider to a bull that's real rank, that's in on pro bull stats, that throws majority of his cowboys off. And those guys know there's a deal, what we call a draw, and every cowboy enters up in the rodeo, and then all of a sudden their name goes in. We put a set of bulls in there and a set of guys in there, and a computer draws their animal for them. So before they show up to the rodeo, they know what bull they have. So they call around and find out if that bull is actually, you know, how, if he turned back to the right out of the chute, if he don't, if he's just real rank or whatever. But you try to even the pen out to where the same group of guys, say 10 guys or 20 guys a night, which you'll see here, if those 20 guys have an even shot, you wouldn't want to put a bull in there that's real easy to ride versus one that's real rank, just because it wouldn't be even. So that's what, you know, you have to, there is different calibers of bulls that we have to match up.
So once a rodeo cowboy knows which bull they're riding, Kidd says they can look up their stats at probullstats.com.
Each bull, just like your last name or your first or last name, they have a number. Like that bull 843, for instance, the Brindle bull there, the second one, he has his brand is 843. So you can go to Pro Bull Stats and type in 843, and that bull should show up on Pro Bull Stats. And every time that bull's been bucked, they see how many seconds he's been rode, who had him, where was he bucked at. So yeah, it's just like baseball, for instance. There's statistics and stats on every animal that we have, even with the time event cattle. Like that steer right there has an ear tag in his ear. We know every time that steer's been ran, where he's been ran, who ran him, and how fast they were. So that's where you're able to sort out on time event cattle versus bucking stock. It's the same thing, but just in different forms. You've got the time event end to where if a steer starts getting slower and slower and slower, well, you eventually have to cull that steer because he's not keeping pace with the other ones. Just like in the bulls, you get one out there that's started off real good and he's starting to slow down, he's starting not to buck as hard, then you move him into different caliber. So there's guys out there in statistics that keep up with that every day.
In order for the bulls, steers, and horses to be ready for competition, they have to be well fed. Rodeo of the Ozarks provides hay, and then Kidd's company figures out how much feed to bring based on how much livestock they haul to the rodeo.
We go to our local feed store here, and we actually buy grain. They get grain in the morning and then hay in the evening. These animals are just like, I mean, you've got animals in here that run anywhere from, say, a roping steer that might run $550 a piece to a bucking bull that might be $30,000. So you tend to take care of a $30,000 or a $700 steer the same way you would anything else. And these animals are getting ready to go on the road. They're getting ready for a full summer, a full July of traveling. So their condition is very important to us. We kind of pride ourselves and make sure they get the best nutrition and feed wherever we go. Always clean water. We always sometimes mix electrolytes in there just to try to get them through the heat, but it's been good here in Springdale because the weather's been so good. But other than that, I mean, they're just like a pro athlete. They've got a job to do. They train. You think we're crazy, but bulls actually got a mental preparation of knowing how much they need to eat, how much hay they got to have to be able to go out and perform. And that's our job, just to provide it for them.
To help care for the animal's medical needs, each rodeo has a vet on site. Kidd says that's a rule in the Professional Rodeo Cowboy Association. He also says the crew he travels with always includes a livestock superintendent.
His job is every day and all day, is basically he checks on our livestock for us. So, yeah, the morning, noon, afternoon, all hours of the night or whatever, he thinks something's not going right, then he makes the proper decision for the health of the animal to best get the result out of it. So yeah, he's on staff. He's a paid employee, and he drives with us, and he goes with us everywhere.
This month, everywhere means heading west. After spending a day back in Texas, Kidd and his crew will haul livestock to Gunnison, Colorado, Ogden, Utah, and then Cheyenne, Wyoming, the site of the Cheyenne Frontier Days. According to the event's webpage, it's the world's largest outdoor rodeo and western celebration. Kidd says it's the second year his company has been contracted for that rodeo. Following that engagement, he says they'll head back to Colorado before heading home to rest for about a month. During their travels, the company leases land with local landowners, so the livestock can have pastures to graze on from time to time.
Everything that we do, as far as animal rights and everything that we do, we try to provide the best quality for an animal that you would want to provide for yourself. And normally there's, you know, we travel with about 10 guys. And so nothing kind of goes overlooked.
The 69th Annual Rodeo of the Ozarks begins today and runs through Saturday at Parsons Stadium in Springdale. More information is available at rodeooftheozarks.org.
This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, July 3rd, 2013. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me on the phone from her favorite place away from Northwest Arkansas, New Orleans, is Becca Martin-Brown, Features Editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. How are you?
I couldn't be happier.
Well, that's good to hear. That's
good. You know, I love this city.
Yes, you
do. I love home, too. I love Northwest Arkansas, but this is the second best place in the world to be.
Well, I'm going to ask you a little bit about Independence Day activities, but first, what did you do in New Orleans yesterday?
Oh, we went to the Audubon Aquarium.
Ah.
They have three new baby penguins. Penguin chicks. They were born, well, they were hatched in March and then raised by aquarium keepers so that they would be really used to humans. Two males and a female, although you can't tell till you send off, like, feather follicles.
Mm-hmm.
So they're named Skua, Marina, and Hubie. And Hubie's going to have a new name, but I haven't heard what it is yet.
I imagine there's not much that is cuter than a young penguin.
They are adorable. And the two girls hang out together watching people all the time. The boy, Skua, is huge and kind of has that grumpy face, like one of the rock hoppers that you see waddle out and glare at people and waddle back in. These are African black-footed penguins, and they are headed for extinction in the wild. So the chance to see penguin chicks at a wonderful aquarium like the Audubon Aquarium is a great thing. And if you would like to see them,
yeah,
you can go on NOLA.com, and there's a photo gallery and a video.
Okay. Excellent. Well,
Now you want to know about the 4th of July where you are, right?
Yes, I do. Thank you.
There is a ton of stuff going on, including tomorrow, the Freedom Festival, which starts with a car show at 9:30 in City Park. There's softball all day, live music all afternoon. And the headliner is Chase Rice from Nashville, Tennessee at 8:30. All this happens at City Park in Gentry.
Okay.
There's a 4th of July parade hosted by the Bella Vista Patriots that starts with pre-parade events at 10:30 and a parade at 11 at Sugar Creek Center in Bella Vista.
And for the first time in a few years, our Independence Day parades are taking place in the 80s, not triple digits.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
It is a good thing.
4th at the Field happens tomorrow with music and fun for kids and an exhibition baseball game, all starting at 4:45 and then fireworks at dusk at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale. That's $8 for adults and $6 for children 12 and younger.
And I know the Northwest Arkansas Naturals are promoting that as the largest fireworks display in Northwest Arkansas. I don't know how you measure that, but that's what they're saying.
I don't either, but who cares?
Right.
It's all fun. And there's an Independence Day celebration at Turpentine Creek Wildlife Refuge near Eureka Springs where you can bring your own fireworks and shoot them in a safe place.
All right.
And we'll have more tomorrow.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is in New Orleans, and she's also the features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
And that's when we realized we had overlooked one small but very important detail. We forgot to ask Sandra which bedroom window was hers.
I've been sheltered all my life by the humane practice of courtship and romantic etiquette. I was unprepared for how the rest of the animal world likes to go about love.
Flicks his wrist, sending the eggs up into the air into two perfectly laid out slow motion backflips. But something goes terribly wrong.
Tales from the South, Saturday afternoon at 3:30 on KUAF.
And this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
And you just heard Becca mention some fireworks for tomorrow, but fireworks are actually starting today at places throughout the area.
They started somewhere in my neighborhood last night, yes.
Well, sure, there were some over the weekend, and it's kind of nice, I guess, when you have it in the middle of the week. People can't decide which weekend, so you get two weekends. I will extend my holiday as much as possible.
You don't have to wait till Labor Day this year.
No, I don't. So today, There is a fireworks celebration in Rogers at Veterans Park. That's where I'll be. There is watermelon food, music at 6:30, and fireworks start around 9. It's free.
You go for the fireworks. I'll go for the watermelon.
Yeah,
everyone's happy.
I won't. Yeah, you're good.
Yeah. In Paris tonight in Logan County, fireworks begin at 9 at the Paris High School football field. That's free. You can learn more at parisaronline.com.
There's some fireworks at Harbor Meadows in Springdale. Those start around 9:25. There are also some fireworks around 9:30 in Bella Vista, and it's free at the Loch Lomond Dam.
That's tonight. Tomorrow. Actual Independence Day.
Yes.
You have the Mayor's 4th of July celebration. That's at Harry E. Kelly River Park in downtown Fort Smith. It's free. The car show's noon to 5, music at 7, fireworks tomorrow night at 9:30. And then in Bentonville, an evening at Orchards Park, music by Breaking Silence begins at 7, followed by the Arkansas Winds Tribute to America. The fireworks begin at dusk at Orchards Park in Bentonville. It's free.
Free Freedom Fireworks with Boom Kinetic at 7 p.m. and fireworks at 9:25. That's at the Northwest Arkansas Mall in Fayetteville, also free. I remember as a kid that would be the place to go, and then I think it went away for a while, and then they've recently brought it back.
I remember. Let me get out my cane here.
Please.
I remember.
Back in my day.
Yes. When the one big show seemed to be at the mall.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some other small ones, but the only one. Yeah.
That's,
and everyone would go to the mall. It would be backed up on 71B. You'd be over on the side.
Yeah.
KEZA would have music that would be played with the fireworks.
That's right.
Yeah.
Because my parents would load us up in the van, and if you were brave enough, you could sit on top of the car.
Yes.
Instead of inside the car.
Yes.
But yes, definitely in the mall parking lot. So glad that's back. Fire in the Sky in Harrison, they'll have fireworks and family fun around 9. That's at the First National Bank Soccer Complex. It's also free. And the Springdale Country Club will also have some fireworks around 9:25.
Then Friday, July 5th, the Pea Ridge Fair with music, a street dance, spaghetti, pageants, fireworks, all happening from 6 until 10:30. That's Friday night at North Curtis and Pickens Streets in Pea Ridge. Also Friday night at Ventress Trails End Resort in Garfield. This one's designed to be seen by boat. Look for mile marker 8.
You know, I think as an intern at the paper, that was one of the early stories that I did. Drove out there, middle of nowhere. But
yeah.
Lovely gentleman that was running the place at the time.
What better place to have fireworks, though, in the middle of nowhere?
I know. It sounded really cool seeing it from, lake. Didn't have a boat at the time, so not feasible for me. And then Saturday, Rodeo of the Ozarks fireworks after the rodeo. Those are also free. And fireworks at 9 at Prairie Creek Marina in Rogers on Saturday as well.
Gunpowder everywhere for the next 72 hours or so.
Nothing says freedom like blowing things up.
If you've been to either of the last two Eureka Springs Blues Festivals, you may recognize this music. While it's influenced by legendary blues forge in the Delta and in Chicago, this music comes from a place further north, Iceland. Haldor Borgensen has played inside the auditorium in downtown Eureka Springs, as well as the blues stage at Turpentine Creek during the past two blues festivals. He's at the center of what is becoming an interesting blues connection between Eureka and Reykjavik. Haldor is the artistic director of the Reykjavik Blues Festival, now in its 10th year. Right after this year's edition of the Eureka Springs Festival concluded, Haldor came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio to talk about his love of the blues. It's an interesting story that's led Haldor to some of the hottest spots in the United States to play blues and to record with legends like Pine Top Perkins. The story begins when he's young, about 10 or 11 years old, and he hears the British invasion coming to his home in Reykjavik.
In Iceland, there was a radio station from the NATO base, American radio station, who was doing top 40, and we were listening to that, and they were all bringing the records over, I think it's the same story with everybody. We were playing with tennis rackets and had one guitar and making drums And after when we were 8 to 9 years old, you know, playing, you know, the Brit, the Brit pop. And then it got deeper, and when Jimi Hendrix came and Cream and everything, and you were reading the back of the albums, and there was always this W. Dixon songwriter. And then I started moving, and who is this Willie Dixon guy?
Baby.
Haldar says he became more and more obsessed with Willie Dixon. Dixon was a musician, prolific songwriter, major ambassador, and huge shaper of the blues after World War II. His interest in the blues led Haldar to buy a guitar, but not to pursue a career as a musician. But a job with a television station in Reykjavik soon changed things. He formed a house band at the station that would occasionally back up visiting performers. And then the band just kept playing and playing and playing together.
So it sounded really great. We played some parties, some house parties and birthday parties. And my friend, he had a gig. John Mayall was coming to Iceland. So we're going to support John Mayall. And that was our first gig. And so we decided to do one gig. And then we decided to do one more gig. And
you haven't stopped since?
Still doing one more gig.
After backing up John Mayall during Mayall's visit to Iceland, the band, now christened the Blue Ice Band, recorded a CD with Jimmy Dawkins. That CD, titled Blues from Iceland, gives Haldar credit on the cover as Blue Ice Bragason. Soon, more Chicago-based blues players were heading north to perform.
We were getting, the winter of the 91 and 2, we were, getting Chicago blues guys to come over for one weekend with the band. And the band grew up pretty quick.
Well, you know, to be the best, you play with the best, right?
Dietro Farr, Billy Boy Arnold, B.B. King's daughter, Shirley King, and then we had Pinto Perkins. And he stayed a little bit longer, and we went into the studio and got to know the guy and gave him the confidence.
As Haldar explains it, Pinetop was at a low point in his career, approaching his 80th birthday. Something Haldar says in Iceland, though, helped Pinetop get his mojo back. The legend from Mississippi and his new bandmates from Iceland headed to Austin for a gig at South by Southwest, then came back to Iceland and recorded an album together. Now Haldar is the artistic director for the Reykjavik Blues Festival, held each spring around Easter. That's made him keenly aware of the blues festivals in Arkansas, including in Helena and Eureka Springs. To explain why music deeply embedded in the American South can resonate with audiences from the Ozarks to Iceland and almost everywhere else, Haldar used the table in our studio.
The first sound you hear is the beating of your mother's heart. And it goes like in a shuffle. 9 months, that's all you hear. Different speeds. But then the other one is like, blues people are such a good people. If you love the blues, you have to have a big heart. And it doesn't enter you unless you have an open heart. And the blues people are so beautiful everywhere. The blues fans, you know, they are just so good to play to. And they appreciate what you do, if you can do it.
Aldor says he and the organizer of Eureka's annual blues festival, Charles Ragsdale, have become valued friends and colleagues. You going to come back to Arkansas?
Of course.
Excellent. Excellent.
Of course. I love it here. I just... the racks, you know, the turpentine. And
oh, yeah, you were...
They are great, doing a great job, and I'm just proud to be... An honor to be able to help out with that. I came last year, and the Blues Society in Reykjavik supported this, me coming. And last year it was a pleasure and a privilege to be able to join the party at the Eureka Springs. And Ragsdale is doing a great job.
Yeah, he is.
I mean, he is amazing, those people, and Laurie, and everybody. Everybody who puts on a blues festival, we know.
Yeah, kindred spirits.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, safe travels. I look forward to your return.
Thank you.
Let me see if I can do this correctly. Takfirish?
Takfirish.
Halldór Borgensen is the artistic director of the Reykjavik Blues Festival and has performed the past 2 years at the Eureka Springs Blues Festival, and he plans to return. He visited with me just after the completion of this year's festival in Eureka Springs.
This is Ozarks at Large. When we turn on a faucet or flush a toilet, we expect the water to flow. Rarely do we consider how that water gets there. Municipalities ensure that residents get their water in exchange for a relatively small fee. That fee pays to treat the water so that it's safe for consumption. It also covers the cost to lay pipes to our homes, as well as any needed maintenance on those pipes or the water towers that store the water. The city of Siloam Springs is currently performing some needed maintenance on the Hill Street Water Tower near downtown. Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas has more.
The sounds of equipment as a crew of about six men prepares the 120-foot-tall Hill Street Water Tower to be painted inside and out. The men work for Utility Service Company Incorporated, a company that is in the business of traveling around to do just that, paint water towers. As this must be completed every 15 years, and given that Siloam Springs has three towers for a population of around 16,000, it's no wonder that such a business exists. Rust can form where the metal comes into contact with the water, and so it must be checked and repainted to keep with state codes. The project costs upwards of $500,000. But before the tank can be repainted on the inside, the 1 million gallons of water must be released. As Daryl Peachy, water treatment plant supervisor, says, it's a process that involves the entire system, not just the one tower. Due to this, 500,000 gallons of water is wasted.
You can't allow your towers to get that low, under 20 pounds of pressure in the system, so we can't allow them to get low enough that we can empty a tank into the system totally, because then you won't have any water pressure. You have to let all your other tanks come down at the same time. You can't just empty one by itself, because they're all interconnected, and hydraulics works, you know, keeps everything level and moving down at the same time. So if you drain one totally into the system, you've drained them all. So we can't allow that to happen. We'll drain them all down so far, and then we'll shut that tank off and then open up a drain line and let it finish draining out to surface, right?
Essentially, each of the three tanks is lowered down to half full. 500,000 gallons from each are released into the system, meaning directly to faucets, spigots, and toilets of residents. The city uses about 5.3 million gallons each day, so this isn't a problem. The Hill Street tank was then contained, shut off from the system, the remaining water being let go. A fire hydrant next to the tower spraying water for a good few hours, leaving the 86 feet in diameter tank ready for painting.
They have to sandblast all the old paint from the inside right down to bare metal, and then they reprimer and spray that primer on, and then they hand paint with roller brushes the lining.
The paint they use is special. It's called a Tanemic paint.
It's designed for water towers and to not leach into water, you know, because you've got paint and water making contact in there, but it's designed for that specific use that it won't leach into the water.
Once painted, the tank must be disinfected and pass bacterial sampling by the state before being filled with water for city consumption. Painting the interior is relatively routine. However, the exterior of the Hill Street Tower has not been repainted since its construction in 1967. Residents say goodbye to that silver paint with black lettering spelling out Siloam Springs. Tents are going up around the tower this week as the work crew prepares to sandblast the old paint away. Again, Daryl Peachy.
Right, and then that old coating has got lead in it, so they can't allow that into the atmosphere. They sandblast it. They've got the ground covered, a full tent. It'll all hit the ground. They'll vac it up and then ship it off to special landfills.
The crew will work steadily for 3 months, hanging from cables with roller brushes in hand until their work in Siloam Springs is complete and they move on to the next town. And if all goes well, as it is, residents will never be the wiser until they notice the freshly painted tower. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
This is Ozarks at Large. Tomorrow is Independence Day, the 4th of July. The day after that, the 5th of July, it's a first Friday. And for downtown Bentonville, that means all sorts of stuff. Daniel Hintz is the executive director of downtown Bentonville. Welcome.
All right. Thank you very much, Kyle. Good to be back.
So Friday, if you have this firework hangover, little hair of the dog.
That's right. Then you might be wanting to sing some blues.
Yes.
And really, the American Art and Music Festival is not just the first Friday, but it also spills into the Saturday as well. As we've mentioned before, we really sort of created the first Fridays to be a launching pad for sometimes full weekend festivals. And this is a great opportunity for that.
So First Friday is sort of a gateway festival.
Yes, a gateway.
That leads you into more
into
on Saturday.
Much more. Yes. It's a veritable cornucopia, yes, if you will.
Mm-hmm. But blues, you mentioned there'll be blues.
Absolutely. No, great blues. We from a lot of local folks, there's some really good blues talent here in Northwest Arkansas. Brick Fields, the duo, they'll come on stage at the Walton Arts Center main stage from 11:30 to 12:50. And those lunch programs are really literally all about lunch. You come down, you grab some great food, and you just listen to music. But the main event, if you will, really starts, kicks off at right around 5 o'clock. We have the Downtown Live Wires, and they've been playing on the Memphis circuit for a little while, and they're out of the Bentonville area, so they're really great. And then starting at 6, we'll bring the Brick Fields band back again. Then at 6:55, we have our fourth annual hot dog eating contest. You need to be 18 years old or older, mainly for liability sake,
yes,
of course. But basically, it's how fast can you eat 5 hot dogs?
And I at least like that it's, you know, the one in Coney Island every year. It's just this time, and people eat dozens.
That's just gross.
And just seems ill-advised.
Yes.
At least this one, you're capped at 5.
Yes, it's decadence with prudence.
Is right.
It's what it is. But yes. So you can either give our office a call or just show up at that time. We usually set it at about 10 people. You get the 5 hot dogs provided by Hot Dog Alley, and we give you a little glass of water.
I was going to say, do people dunk them? Because I see that sometimes.
There are so many techniques.
Okay.
Some growing from you know, these amazing strategies to just stuffing your face. It is quite amazing. And so we kind of lead up with great music. We have this insane hot dog eating contest that I actually dress up like a hot dog in celebration of the hot dog contest. And then at 7 o'clock, Earl and them, Earl Cates.
Yes.
Will be there. And if you haven't seen those guys perform, I mean, they can tear up a stage. And really, really great stuff. Then that evening at both the Pressroom and Tuscan Trotter, we also have live music. Lucius Spiller, who is a great sort of Delta blues, really deep blues. He'll be at the Pressroom from 7 to 9. And then R.J. Michaud, who we've booked before, and that guy's great. Have you seen him?
I've seen him. He's been in our studio 2 or 3 times. We love RJ.
Yeah, and he's great to work with. He's going to be at Tuscan Trotter from 8 to 10. on that Friday. And then the next day, on Saturday, during the Bentonville Farmers Market, from 10 to about 11, David Kimbrough, another great jazz or blues musician. At 11, we kind of break up the blues and we do a kids' bike parade. And so kids can show up with their bikes. The Walmart Visitor Center actually has this whole pit stop where you can bring your bike and get it all sort of jazzed up, if you will. We leave from the square. It's really short. It's 2.5 blocks. We come back to the square. And all kids that participate will get a little ticket to go into the Spark Cafe at the Walmart Visitor Center and get the cutest little ice cream cones you'll ever see from Yarnell's Ice Cream. So that's a way to break up some of the vibe that we've got there. The pit stop will be from 9:45 to about 10:45 or 9 to 10:45. And then the parade will start at 11. And then Lucius Spiller comes back on the stage that morning from 11:30 to 12:45. And then that evening at Tuscan Trotter, R.J. Michaud comes back from 8 to 10. So we've got live music, great stuff going on, hot dog eating contests, and a kids' bike parade.
All that stuff outside is free, right?
Yes, it is all free. Absolutely. And so, yeah, so just come on down and have a great time. Now, we also have some gallery opening, Roberta Philbrook, art gallery, as they are normally want to do. Usually brings a great artist to participate in First Friday. We also have some artists at the press room. So a lot of the retailers and the restaurants sort of jump on board and do some fun things as well.
DowntownBentonville.org?
Yes.
For more information?
And 479-254-0254 if people want to talk to a human being.
And there will be another First Friday in August.
There will be another First Friday. Back to school.
Oh, yeah.
That
makes me shiver.
I know.
I haven't had to go back to school in decades, but that still makes me shiver.
But it's one last way to play. We're working with some of our partners right now, and it is going to be a full-on play fest. It is going to be awesome. Mm-hmm. So be prepared for more details.
Okay. Thank you, Daniel.
Yes, thank you.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, a scientist weighs in on the need for nuclear power.
Without an expanded commitment to nuclear energy, our chances of avoiding some of the most serious consequences of climate change are going to be much reduced.
That story and William Faulkner's words about Gettysburg next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Here and Now, coming up next here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle. KUAF and the Alma Performing Arts Center invite you to register for the Alma PAC 2013-14 season giveaway. One winner will receive two season tickets, which include a production of the comedy musical 9 to 5, entertainer Soji Tabuchi, and more. The drawing will be Friday, July 19th, during the new edition of Ozarks at Large. Registration information available at KUAF.com. I should also tell you, support for KUAF comes from the Fayetteville Underground, promoting the visual arts in Northwest Arkansas, supporting artists working to the highest standards, and contributing to the advancement of Fayetteville as a destination city for the arts. Information regarding art shows, concerts, and more available at FayettevilleUnderground.com.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Ozark.
2 days in a row for Ozark.
Is it?
Yeah. Hey, it's in our title.
That's okay.
Ozarks at Large, yes. Just wanted to point out that we heard my conversation with Holdar Borgeson.
Yes.
From Iceland. Some people might hear that and go, okay, what's the deal? Because I went to Iceland.
Yes.
And then
everybody knows that you like Iceland a lot.
The first interview I had coming back, but it was facilitated by Paul Kelso, our blues guy.
So not your fault.
Completely at random.
Completely random.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
If you say so.
And a lot of music coming up on Friday's edition of Ozarks at Large.
Yes. With the holiday weekend, we thought it was a perfect time to kind of the halfway mark of the year, perfect time to sort of reflect on all of the music we've had in the building. We've had a lot.
We have. And it's, you know, we'll hear 10 performances that were recorded inside our building. And that's about a third or maybe even a less than what we had to choose from.
Yeah.
And then we'll have some more the Friday and Sunday after Christmas.
Yes.
But that's on Friday's show. And it's a wide variety of music.
Yes, and you'll be back tomorrow with Ozarks at Large all by your lonesome.
All by my lonesome on Independence Day. That's okay.
Independently doing Independence Day show.
That's right. That's right. Do you set off fireworks?
It depends. Sometimes. Okay. My brother-in-law, his family has a tent that sells fireworks, so sometimes we go out there. It just depends.
Be careful.
Well,
I
will.
That's all I'm saying. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Happy early 4th of July.